Good morning. This is Brian Trumbore of StocksandNews.com with your week in review for Saturday, January 10th. President-elect Barack Obama said this week, "For too many families, this new year brings new unease and uncertainty as bills pile up, debts continue to mount, and parents worry that their children won't have the same opportunities they had." Certainly hard to argue with that sentiment. Nothing we learned this week when it comes to the global economy changed matters. The December jobs report in the U.S. was again dreadful, with a loss of 524,000 jobs and a big revision downward for November to a loss of 584,000. The unemployment rate now stands at 7.2%, the highest since 1993. For all of 2008, the economy shed 2.6 million jobs, a figure not reached in America since 1945. 1.9 million have been lost in just the past 4 months, and the outlook for 2009 is for perhaps another 3 million to lose their jobs after the positive impact of the coming stimulus program. The picture is even bleaker than this, however, when one looks at the millions underemployed and a further 4.6 million who are currently calculated to be long-term unemployed. In other economic news for the week, the National Association of Realtors, the group that at the top of the market was still urging everyone to buy without reservations, said pending home sales in November hit a record low. November factory orders were down a whopping 4.6%, double expectations, but construction spending off 0.6% for November as well, was slightly better than analyst forecast. And the ISM measure of the service sector came in at 40.6, also a little better than expected, but still obviously in deep recession mode. Then there's retail. I always feel like I'm not much different than the average Joe, and so since November I've been waiting until post-Christmas to hit the local mall, and in my case pick up a sweater or two on sale. There was a headline in the Wall Street Journal this week that read, "Retailers keep cutting prices. Deals on early spring merchandise reflect fears. Consumers want only bargains now." Well, that's me. I have to tell you, I was never that way before. But I went to Macy's, spent way more time looking for the right item than usual. I've been known to buy a home in 3 minutes and a car in 30 seconds. And I finally picked up a Hilfiger sweater, originally $80 for $29, and a shirt originally $39.50 for $13.50. If I'm acting this way, I know everyone else is. And as the above headline reads, "For the foreseeable future, I'm doing nothing but buying sale items." In the retail universe, for December, Walmart's same-store sales gains, ex-fuel, were up less than expected, 1.7%, and the company warned on earnings, breaking a nice string of nothing but good news from the world's biggest retailer. Sears' same-store sales were down 7.3% for December. Macy's down 4%, Gap down 14%. Abercrombie, which refused to cut prices, down 24%. Target down 4%. Kohl's down 1.4%. JCPenney down 8%. Nordstrom's down 14%. And Saks down 20%. Overall, when looking at the various surveys, it appears holiday sales were off 2 to 4% for November and December. Around the world, China's manufacturing index for December came in at 41.2. Just a reminder, for all indices like this, 50 is the dividing line between contraction and growth. Though the 41.2 for China was ever so slightly an improvement over the previous month. However, China's biggest PC manufacturer, Lenovo, announced the first layoffs in its history, 2,500 or 11%. Taiwan's exports in the month of December crashed a record 42%. Japan's domestic auto sales cratered to new lows. Germany's unemployment rate spiked higher. They had been holding up until now. The UK's Chancellor of the Exchequer, John Darling, said a second-half recovery was out the window and inflation rates continue to tumble all over the world. Normally a good thing, except the fear now is deflation. Back in the U.S., Intel announced its fourth quarter sales would fall woefully short of already lowered expectations, down 23% from year-ago levels. Time Warner, amidst the crash in advertising, cable, and all media, is writing off $25 billion in assets. Aluminum giant Alcoa said it was shedding 13% of its workforce, or 13,500, as well as reducing output 18%. And Boeing announced on Friday it was laying off 4,500. And in the banking sector, superstar Oppenheimer analyst Meredith Whitney, and I find it funny how many in her industry are immensely jealous of her success. Guys, you need to get over it. Reiterated that the banks will continue to need more capital as the securities they carry suffer further downgrades, securities such as mortgage-backed paper, as housing continues to worsen. Ergo, they'll need far more capital, and just where they will get it these days is anyone's guess. Certainly the sovereign wealth funds have learned a painful lesson in this regard. As for our incoming president and his stimulus program, the street isn't too happy. Details have been lacking, but it's because many on both sides of the political aisle have problems with the broad structure that has been floated thus far, a sizable tax cut combined with a massive infrastructure rebuilding initiative. Some Democrats don't like the former, and some Republicans aren't too keen on the latter. So Mr. Obama will have the first test of his pragmatism and how well he can get the two sides to compromise. Economist Robert Shiller said of the outline of the Obama plan, quote, "If we have massive infrastructure spending and people feel that it is working, it could create a sense that we are okay and people will go back to normal. The real problem is that we are on hold. Everyone is." Of course, whatever Obama's plan turns out to be, it will be costly, and as he said in a speech this week, we could see trillion-dollar deficits for years to come. So we sit around and ask ourselves, who is going to fund them? Economist Robert Samuelson notes in his Washington Post op-ed, quote, "To convince the likes of China and Japan, interest rates might have to rise, which might perversely worsen the crisis. There might even be a panicky flight from the dollar. So far, the opposite has happened. Scared investors have crowded into safe treasuries and driven their interest rates to astonishing lows. Still, psychology has governed this unpredictable crisis. A sudden shift in sentiment isn't inconceivable." Samuelson continues, "Even if this unpleasant surprise and others don't materialize, the stimulus remains a stopgap. The present crisis represents a fundamental break in the recent pattern of American economic growth. For the past quarter century, the economy has advanced on an ever-rising tide of personal borrowing that supported expanded purchases of consumer goods and a housing boom. But lending became reckless and many households overborrowed. And in its simplest terms, the stimulus substitutes the federal government's superior credit for damaged private credit." Samuelson continues, "But this cannot continue indefinitely. Rapid increases in the federal debt, much faster than in recent years, would threaten a further loss of confidence that might prolong today's financial crisis or someday trigger a new one. A growing federal debt burden would also compound the problem of paying the staggering retirement costs of aging baby boomers. So neither rising household nor government debt provides a plausible foundation for future economic growth. What the United States needs is export-led growth. The rub is that many other countries want that too." Robert Samuelson. Meanwhile, when it comes to spending taxpayer funds, as in the $700 billion TARP program, a congressional oversight panel blasted Treasury's implementation of it, there's been zero accountability, including on the issue of whether or not the recipients of TARP funds are actually lending. Yale professor Jeffrey Garten told Bloomberg, "The government isn't acting aggressively enough to demand a quid pro quo. The public good is the key to the private good in this case. It's not the other way around." Former Assistant Treasury Secretary Roger Altman said, "Right now there is no new lending, and without new lending it's going to be difficult for the economy to recover." And a Government Accountability Office report found recently, although Treasury has said that it expects the institutions to increase the flow of credit, the department has not yet determined whether it will impose reporting requirements on the participating financial institutions. Lastly, just to reiterate my own outlook for 2009, despite my doom and gloom on the economy, I remain bullish on stocks, and I do believe that the S&P and Dow will rise 20% and the Russell 2000 and NASDAQ 30% this year. It's been a rather bizarre opening, six trading days. I'm a big believer in the January barometer. As the month goes, so goes the year, as well as the first 5 days indicator, also a past predictor of success or failure for the full year. And you can view my Wall Street history column on the topic. As measured by the S&P 500, the market was up the first five trading days, 903 to 909, but it finished Friday at 890, off 4.5% for the week, and is thus down 1.4% for the year. The Dow Jones declined 4.8% to 85.99, while NASDAQ lost 3.7% to 1571. It's generally the worst week for the market since November. But the street was rocked late Friday as word got out first that Bob Rubin was leaving the board of Citigroup, a 10-year term as senior advisor that was a disaster, though his bank account was stuffed with $115 million over the same period. Then we learned there are talks between Citigroup and Morgan Stanley over Citi's Smith Barney brokerage unit, which would be combined with Morgan Stanley's sales force in a joint venture. I'll have far more on this next week, but for now, as of Saturday morning, it looks like a done deal. Oil tumbled back to the $40 level, $40.83, off almost $6 in the week as inventory spiked higher with still declining demand. Natural gas didn't fare well either as the drawdown expected this time of year was less than expected. And the chairman of one of India's largest technology companies, B. Ramalinga Raju of Satyam Computer Services, admitted to the nation's biggest financial fraud, including a fictitious cash balance of more than $1 billion. Satyam, an outsourcing company with many tentacles in the United States, including contracts with General Motors and Ford, previously reported it made $400 million in profits for its last fiscal year as it competes with fellow Indian outsourcers Wipro and Infosys. But in his letter of resignation, Raju, now under arrest, noted that for the quarter ending September 30th, Satyam reported $136 million in profit when the real amount was only $12.5 million. The company also said at the time it had over $1 billion in cash when the total was actually $66 million. Raju added in a statement that no other board members were aware of the ruse and said, quote, it was like riding a tiger, not knowing how to get off without being eaten, close quote. I wouldn't know. I'll be back with you next week.